Hey, good morning, everyone. My name is Rob, one of the pastors here. It's great to be with you. We've been studying this book in the New Testament called the First Peter. It's actually a letter written by the Apostle Peter, the fisherman who always put his foot in his mouth by what he said and what he did. My kind of man. Remember, he was the guy who said, "Jesus, I want to walk on water." And he's, walking on water. And then he looked down and started sinking. And he was the guy, you know, who couldn't catch any fish. And then Jesus said, "Throw your net on the other side." And he said, "Really? Okay." And then caught 100-something fish. He was that guy, the guy who denied Jesus 3 times, but then the guy who really, who was one of the greatest missionaries and influences on the church, the Apostle Peter. So we're going to look at his story. So if you have a Bible, turn at 1 Peter chapter 4. I just have 6 verses to cover this morning, but there's 2 very interesting verses that we'll have to tackle, and we're going to jump right in. But first, as you're turning there, my son was in the first service. He's not here, so now I can exaggerate even more. About a month ago, we went paintballing, and we went with some of his buddies, some dads, and I love paintball. I don't know if you do. I love it, especially when you go with younger kids. It's way more fun. I get scared of, like, the guys and the women who are like, they're like, do it for a living. You know what I'm talking about? They come all geared up and with like $1,000 gun, and you're like, man, get a life. Kind of, you know, those people scare me. 12-year-olds don't scare me. And so we got out there, and I realized real quick, like, when you go paintballing, you need to get yourself ready. Like, you gotta arm yourself. You gotta have like the right gear. And so you get a gun, and then you have to dial it in and make sure it's, you know, works, right? A non-working gun is bad in paintball. And then they give you this face mask and a helmet. And it's really smart to wear something to cover your neck, because it doesn't cover your neck, right? So like a hood or something like that. And then you need paintballs, like those little things, right? You need those. I made a mistake. I wore very thin pants when I went paintballing, so it hurt when I got hit in the leg. But you need to have the right stuff. But what I've noticed about paintballing and really most things in life is you got to have the right attitude, right? And so we were out there, and as soon as you get hit, you know, it's like, you know, and some of these kids was like, "I want to go home, and this is not fun." And you know, and what I've noticed though is so we did this dads versus kids round because we're mean, and we spread them out. And you got to have the right attitude, because here's what happens is, you know, some people like me are kind of aggressive and they like to run out there and go crazy. When I was a high school pastor, no joke, we'd take kids paintballing and I would always challenge our upperclassmen just to wear tank tops. That was fun. That was really fun. Anyway, and so what we did is, you know, they blew the horn and we went, and I was out there shooting. I noticed real quickly, wow, like all the dads got hit quick. Right? And so I went into like, you know, like commando mode. Like, it was awesome. I was like flipping over stuff and, you know, crawling, and it was amazing. And I got all the kids except for 2. One was my son and one was his buddy. And they made a fatal mistake. They went back to what they thought was safety. They went back to the bunker, right? And they thought that was going to protect them. And so they were shooting one way. Little did they know that 39-year-old Rob Hall was creeping around the other side, right? Like, you know, doing like this, you know, like totally, you know, commando. And I went around the corner and I saw them. And you're supposed to, when you're point blank range, you're supposed to say, you know, surrender or freeze. And what did Pastor Rob Hall do? Boom, boom, you're out. You're right. So close. It was awesome. And what I was trying to tell my son after that, I said, "This is a lesson in life, son." Right? And the lesson is, don't play it safe. Like, you think you're safe in the bunker, but you are not, right? And it's all about attitude. You can have the right gear, but if you try to play it safe, man, you're going to fail. And I think that principle is true for life, right? I don't know if you're aware, but life is kind of a battle. It's a fight. I mean, most of us, if you're here, whether you're a Christian or not, my guess is you're trying your best to live a good life. You're trying to work hard. For some of you, you're trying to raise a family. If you're married, you're trying to be a good spouse, whatever that means to you. And so it doesn't really matter if you're a Christian or not. Here's what happens. I like to say life kind of shows up. And sometimes you get a curveball, and since it's opening day of baseball, you guys know what a curveball is, right? A curveball is an off-speed pitch that throws you off of balance. Life kind of does that, and you get thrown off of balance, and it happens all the time, right? You lose your job, or someone gets sick, or a spouse just seemingly out of nowhere shuts down emotionally, or a child especially when they're a teenager, starts making bad decisions. Or my favorite is that unexpected bill that you get that at like the worst possible time. Those are my favorite, you know, like, or when your car breaks down in the worst possible time. And so the question is, how do you prepare yourselves for those things, right? How do you arm yourselves? And I'm picking up that word from the text you'll see in a minute. How do you arm yourselves for the battles that we all have to face every single day? How do we prepare to really suffer? And so Apostle Peter in the text we're looking at this morning is trying to help his church. Remember, they were scattered all over Asia Minor. They're starting to face persecution and suffering. Not very intense, but it was starting to get more intense. And he's trying to teach them how they need to respond to suffering. Now, specifically, he's talking about suffering for the sake of Christ. But I want to kind of broaden it because I believe these principles that we'll look at in a moment really can deal with any suffering that you and I experience every week, every day. And so the question is, how do we prepare? How do we arm ourselves? Peter's going to tell us three things, okay? And the first place is going to start with our mind. Listen to what he says in verses 1-2. If you have a Bible, go ahead and turn there. He's going to say, we need to be willing to suffer rather than sin. Therefore, in verse 1 of chapter 4, since Christ suffered in his body, arm yourselves also with the same attitude. Because whoever suffers in the body is done with sin. As a result, they did not live the rest of their earthly lives for evil human desires, but rather for the will of God. Let me just stop there. Our passage begins with therefore. Remember, anytime you see in the Bible a therefore, you need to ask the question, what is it therefore? And so the therefore connects to the passage before. And the passage before talked about specifically the suffering of Jesus, who was ultimately put to death. Why? So that you and I might have life through his death and his resurrection. And so Peter's already explained that Jesus is the model for our suffering, and we need to look to him when we suffer because he suffered unto death. And so Peter says, in light of that salvation, in light of what Jesus did for you and me, he says, therefore, arm yourselves with the same attitude. It's very interesting that the phrase arm yourselves only appears right here in the New Testament, nowhere else. It's actually a military term that means to equip. And so Peter says we need to equip ourselves with the same attitude. He's saying we need to be ready. He's saying that suffering is coming. That word attitude literally means thinking, the same thinking. So he's saying here that we don't need to have a positive attitude. He's not talking about that. He's telling us we need to actually literally prepare our minds and get ready for suffering because suffering is coming. Like when I went out there and paintball, like I was ready, mentally ready. I'm like, I'm going to destroy these kids, right? And you got to get ready. And so he's saying, though, that if we're going to be prepared for real life, not Instagram life, for real life, followers of Jesus need to have the same thinking as Jesus, who willingly suffered all the way to the cross. Now, this chapter and the next chapter, and most of Peter is a book that deals with suffering. And here's what I've realized about suffering. You talk to different people, everyone handles suffering a little differently, right? For some people, actually, suffering draws them away from God. And when they suffer, a lot of people will blame God. Why are you letting this happen to me? Many of us will fold into and just give up because the pressure is too much. Some of us will look to numb the pain for our suffering. Others that I've met, you know, they'll just deny that suffering is there. I'm good. No, you don't need to. No, I'm good. But then others, when they suffer, when stuff happens to them, man, they respond in a completely different way. Their suffering actually does the opposite. It drives them closer to God. Those people begin to pray more. Those people start to attend church a whole lot more. Why? Because they are realizing that in the midst of their suffering, they need to cling to God. And that's what Peter is saying. He's saying the difference in those who turn away from God from suffering and those who turn to God really is the same word, attitude. It's their mental perspective on suffering. If they're serious about following Jesus, they need to have the same attitude who chose suffering. And Jesus consistently chose to obey God even when it hurt him, even when it was hard, even when it eventually cost him his life. Peter is saying that's the right attitude towards suffering. And then he goes on and he talks about the purpose for our suffering. And so we suffer not because God is mad at us. Sometimes we think that, oh, what did I do, God, to deserve this? You did nothing. See, sometimes our suffering actually is because of our own stupid mistakes and decisions, right? Don't nudge your neighbor. You know, he knows that or she knows that. But Peter is telling us that the hard times in our lives are never pointless. They can actually serve a purpose if we allow them to. What's the purpose? Peter tells us in verse 1, he says, whoever suffers in the body is done with sin. Now, this is a challenging verse to interpret because some people look at this and go, wow, so if I'm suffering, I'm done with sin. I can be perfect and sinlessly perfect. Let me just say that's impossible. That's not what he's saying. He is not saying that in this life you will be without sin. Peter means this, and what he's trying to say is this, is that if you and I trust God enough to endure suffering for what is right, then that means that you have mentally made a decisive break with sin. He's saying that those who willingly choose suffering, they choose suffering over sinning. Why? Because when you came to Christ, when you placed your faith in him, what happened at that moment, Peter has already told us this, that sin was at that moment ultimately put to death in your life. If you're with us when we studied the book of Romans, we talked about this word a lot. The word was justified, justification, just as if you never sinned. That means you were made positionally, you were made righteous in a moment. Right? So the moment you place your faith in Christ, when God looks at you, he sees the life of Jesus, not your life. But here's the problem. And if you're a Christian for long enough, you see it real quick, is that, yeah, you're positionally made righteous, you're justified, but then something else happens. You realize, wow, I still struggle with sin, right? And so what happens is that the lifetime process of sanctification begins. Again, that's just another fancy theological word that simply means that God is working in you, drawing you out, making you more holy, making you more like his son Jesus. So you are justified. That moves on to sanctification. That's what Peter is talking about. And so here's another thing. As you endure suffering, as you are prepared to suffer, as you understand it well, here's what happens in your life. Is somehow, and I don't fully understand it, but somehow, have you ever noticed that like temptation starts to lose its power in your life? Right? Like when you're suffering, and when you see God show up and deal with you and draw close to you, when he gets you through that, whatever that thing is, what happens is you think, man, if Jesus can get me through this, nothing is too hard for him. If Jesus can get me through this, then I'm not going to be tempted by that because I know who I am, right? And that's why he says in verse 2, he says, so as a result, they, that's you and I, who are followers of Jesus, do not live the rest of their earthly lives for their evil human desires, but rather our goal, our aim, our purpose is the will of God. And so what he's saying here, he's saying that the moment you place your faith in Jesus, God begins to transform you from the inside out. And those who suffer with the right attitude, with the attitude of Christ, you begin to live in a completely new way. And so instead of living for yourself, which is the condition you were born into, you now live for the will of God. And that's why when Jesus taught us how to pray, he said, don't pray my will be done, pray thy will be done. And so Peter, what he's doing here, he's saying, hey, suffering and having a right perspective starts first in your mind. There needs to be a readiness or a willingness to suffer rather than sin. It starts with the right attitude, but that's not all. He turns the corner and says, secondly, if we're going to prepare for suffering, we need to know that we're going to suffer at the hands of people who don't like us. Those on the outside, I wrote down in my notes, we need to be willing or be ready to suffer abuse from unbelievers. Why do I say, let me just read what he says here in verse 3 and 4. He says, for you, that's you and I love this, you have spent enough time in the past doing what the pagans choose to do. And remember, listen to this list. He's writing to Christians. This is good news. You spent enough time in the past living in debauchery, lust, drunkenness, orgies, carousing, and detestable idolatry. They are surprised, so that is the unbelievers, they are surprised that you don't join them anymore in their reckless, wild living. And so they heap abuse on you. And so he's saying, hey, first you need to be willing to suffer and not sin, but then you're going to get abuse and you're going to suffer from people who don't get you, don't understand you. And remember, Apostle Peter is writing this letter to a church living within the Greco-Roman world. See, sometimes we read the Bible and we think, oh man, it was so much easier back then. You know, they didn't have the internet. And, you know, they're all holy, right? That was not the case, right? See, people living in this day who are not followers of Jesus, they didn't really care that Christians worshiped Jesus. They didn't care about that. It was a polytheistic culture. Worship whoever you want. Everyone had their own gods, their own personal gods. Like, everyone worshiped someone or something. The reason why the early church suffered was because they worshiped Jesus only. And it was very offensive back then and today to say that Jesus is the only way to heaven and to label other religions as idolatry. And that's what they did. And so not only that, and then Peter tells us, not only that, but their lifestyle of Christians was offensive. Here's why. See, unbelievers in the Roman world, they looked at Christians and said, you know what, you guys are just prudes. You guys don't join in what we do. You guys don't come to the same parties. You don't go to the gladiator arena to watch people die. You know, you don't go to the chariot races and bet. You don't go to the Roman theater to watch our risque shows. And this is crazy, you Christians. You guys don't have sex outside of marriage. Wow, you don't get drunk with us. You decline all of my invitations to our orgy parties. That's what he says. You don't lie. You don't cheat. You don't steal. What kind of fun life is that? And I love what Peter says. He tells the church, he says, hey, y'all spent enough time in that kind of lifestyle. He said, you spent enough time doing what they've chosen to do. And I think what he's saying, he says, hey, you've done enough sinning for a lifetime, church. And some of you are like, amen, yeah. Yeah. But for many of us, we've been there, right? We know firsthand what it's like to live like the rest of the world. And let me just be honest. Like, it wasn't all that bad either, all the time. Like, let's be clear here. Sin can often be fun. But the fun never lasts, does it? You wake up the next morning, the next day, feeling empty, lonely, lost, insecure. You wonder, gosh, is that really all there is to life? Now, for some folks I talk to, you know, and I'll talk to them about the faith or I'll hear stories and they'll say, you know what, Rob, I'm not really sure I'm really done with that lifestyle yet. I'm not really sure I've done enough sinning yet. And they'll say, you know, Rob, I know I need to get right with God. I know I should start coming to church. But you know what? One day, I'll get there. I'll get married and then we'll have to come to church, you know. And if Peter were here, he would say, enough's enough. No matter if you sinned a little or a whole heck of a lot, it's plenty. Make a break with that life. Instead, choose the will of God. And guess what happens? When you do that, you will suffer for the name of Christ. And what happens, if this has happened to you, it's happened to me, what happens when you make a break with some of your old friends and some of that old life, Peter tells us, because he's a realist, and they are surprised that you no longer enjoy them. Like, what? Oh, you're too good now, huh? Oh, okay. Oh, we know where you come from. Now you don't want to come out with us. And you can't really change. Oh, come on, just come out one time. Just do that one time, that one thing. We know who you really are. And Peter says that those same people who were your friends are now heaping abuse on you because they don't like who you represent and what you stand for. Really, has anything changed? And literally, Peter says that they actually heap abuse on you. That phrase literally means blasphemy. And that blasphemy was not directed against God, how it typically it was directed against Christians. That word means that they disrespect, malign, slander, and defame you all because of your commitment to Jesus. And Peter has told us, if you're going to be serious about following Christ, that is the world that we live in. Why? Because you're in exile, you're a foreigner, you're a stranger. You don't fit in. Why? Because as a follower of Jesus, you have a different value system, a different worldview, a different way of thinking. But guess what? It's going to be offensive to people. You know, as a new Christian, man, I learned this real quick. Like, if I was going to get off to a good start, then I needed to change some things in my life. I was dating a girl. We were not honoring God with our relationship, so I broke up with her. And you know what she did? She made fun of me. She was like, oh, you're a little goody two-shoes now, huh? Right? And I'm like, I'm so glad I broke up with you. No, right? But then I had friends, and we were buddies since childhood, and I we loved to party. And I realized, man, if I'm really going to honor Christ, I need to find some other friends, you know? And it was hard because they were like, well, we're not good enough for you any longer. You know, and then as I matured, thankfully took time, I was able to re-engage those friendships from a position of strength, not of weakness. Right. And but let me just be honest, like what I had to deal with, what many of us in the room have to deal with when it comes to suffering, it's not a big deal. It's really not. I don't think Peter's talking about, you know, people sneering at you or making fun of you for going to church. No, no, no. Today, I think about like a young Muslim girl coming to faith in Jesus Christ in a country like Yemen or Iraq or Sudan or Syria. Maybe she saw the Jesus movie and placed her faith in Jesus. And as that came out, At best, she would be completely rejected from her family and ostracized from her community. At worst, they would kill her. That's what Peter's talking about. See, according to the Pew Research Center, over 75% of the world's population lives in areas with severe religious restrictions, and many of these people are Christians. According to the U.S. Department of the State, Christians in more than 60 countries face serious persecution from their government or surrounding neighbors simply because of their faith in Jesus. Each month, I read this, I couldn't believe it. Each month around the world, 322 Christians die for their faith, 214 churches or Christian properties are destroyed, and 772 forms of violence are committed against Christians every single month. And so let's keep this in perspective. If we live in the United States of America, we are living in Disneyland. Most of the world would love to have your problems in mind. But at the same time, I don't want to minimize your problems in mind because they're serious. I get that. And so Peter, he's telling us, hey, how do we prepare for that kind of suffering? How do we prepare for your kind of suffering? He says, hey, we need to be willing and ready to suffer rather than sin. We need to be willing and ready to suffer abuse from unbelievers because it will happen. And then finally, Peter says this, we need to willingly live in light of God's judgment. Willingly live in light of God's judgment. How do I get that? Look with me at verse 5 and 6. He says, but they, those are the people that are heaping abuse on you, they will have to give account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. And so verse 6 is a comment on verse 5, because verse 6 gets a little weird. Here it is. For this is the reason the gospel was preached even to those who are now dead, so that they might be judged according to human standards in regard to the body, but live according to God in regard to the spirit. Let me unpack this. Yet again, what Peter says here would anger any people in the first century Greco-Roman world. Why? Because they did not believe in any universal claim to truth. But Peter teaches here that there is one truth, and that truth is no one escapes God's judgment. They would have balked at that and said, who do you think you are? And what Peter is doing here, he's actually trying to encourage Christians and also warn non-Christians at the same time. To Christians, he's saying, hey, don't be discouraged. All those people who are haters, all those people who heap abuse on you, you know what? At the end of the day, they're going to have to give an account to God, the judge. To Christians, he's saying, don't be discouraged. You're not the judge. Love people. Let God judge people. And then to those Christians who died, they too will have to give an account in accordance to their faith in Jesus. If you're a follower of Jesus, what he's saying here is that you and I will be judged on Jesus's life, not your life. But then to non-Christians, he's warning them. He's saying, if you're not yet a follower of Jesus, you will have to give an account for the abuse you dish out on Christians. You'll have to give an account for how you've lived your life with what God has given you. So those of you who reject the gospel of Jesus Christ, those of you who mock Christians for what they believe and how they live, at the end of the day, you will answer to God. Now, verse 6 is a little confusing because the question is, who are the dead, right? He says, but for this reason, the gospel is preached even to those who are now dead. How is the gospel preached to those who are dead? And let me just summarize it real quick. I believe, as do most scholars, that Peter is referring to Christians who heard the gospel, who responded to the gospel, and then died. That's all he's saying. Why he makes it confusing, I don't know. He's not saying that there is some second chance of salvation for those who have died. How do I know that? Because why would he encourage Christians to willingly suffer if we had a second chance in life, in the afterlife, right? Peter would say, hey, go have at it, man. Move to Las Vegas and do your thing. You'll get a second chance, homeboy. He doesn't say that. So again, see, Peter is answering the question, how do you and I prepare for suffering? He says, here's the final way. Live in light of God's coming judgment. You know what that means? That means all your suffering, my suffering, in light of eternity, is temporary. It's short. It's not going to last. Peter's going to say that later. He says, don't be surprised by the fiery ordeal that's coming upon you. Don't be surprised. But he's saying here that when you are suffering, remember, keep it in perspective. God is coming again, and God will be the ultimate judge. So if your suffering is unjust, he'll make it right. God will have the final word, so you don't have to. You know, sometimes when we talk about the end times and judgment, you know, all of our blood pressure goes up, right? Some of us feel joy, like, come again. Other of us are scared. I get that. Listen to what author and pastor Frederick Buechner said about this great word. And afterward, please help me. The first service didn't do anything. After I read this quote, it's that good. You should say this. Ooh, good. Okay. So just want to prepare you for that. If I don't hear that, I'll feel like this is not a good quote. I think it is. Frederick Buechner writes, the New Testament proclaims that at an unforeseeable time in the future, God will ring down the final curtain on history. And there will come a day on which all of our days and all of the judgments upon us and all of our judgments upon each other will themselves be judged. The judge will be Christ. And here's the good part. In other words, the one who judges us most finally will be the one who loves us most fully. Good, 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 good. That's good. The one who ultimately judges us will be the one who loves you already most fully. Man. And so this morning, I just want to talk about suffering and how do we prepare. I want to talk to three different groups of people as I conclude. Peter says, be willing to suffer rather than sin. He says, be willing to suffer abuse from unbelievers. And he ends by saying, willingly suffer or live in light of God's judgment. So I want to talk to three groups of people that are here every Sunday. Not yet Christians, new Christians, and mature Christians. So think about who you are. First, for not yet Christians, Peter would tell you, you have to give an account for what you did with what God gave you. That day is coming. But God has provided one way out and one way only to escape his judgment, and that is through his son, Jesus Christ. See, the truth is our sin, your sin, my sin, separated us from a holy God, but God lovingly and willingly sent his one and only son to die in your place and for your sin. And after 3 days, he rose from the dead and offers us not only forgiveness, but eternal life. If you are not yet a follower of Jesus, tomorrow is not promised. Today is the day. Come to Jesus. Place your faith in him. Begin to trust him today. For those of you, though, you're a new Christian, or maybe you're just kind of coming back to church, or maybe you grew up Catholic and now you're like really understanding what it means to follow Jesus, or maybe you went to a weird church or whatever, but you're here. And let me just encourage you. You were just started on this journey, right? And so Peter wants to help you manage your expectations. Don't underestimate the degree of difficulty that's coming. You will suffer. Sometimes it's because of people in your past. Sometimes it's for no reason at all. And trust me, if you live as a follower of Jesus for long enough, you will be tempted to give up, to turn back, to throw in the towel. Peter says, stay the course. It will be hard, but it will be worth it to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. And many of you are mature Christians. It's up to you whether you think that or not. It's up to you and God. But many of you have been living for Jesus for a long time. And let me just encourage you with this. Don't forget that God's still not done with you. That you have not crossed the finish line unless you die. And so Peter would say, press on. Continue to fight the good fight. I think the best thing you can do if you're a mature follower of Jesus is to pour your life into someone else who's just getting started. So when they come to you going, oh man, my life is hard and I'm suffering. You say, yeah, I've been there, done that. Let's pray about it. Let's talk about it. And for those of us who've been Christians for a long time, we should set the example of how to respond to suffering. Right? Man, that's hard too. Trust me. But for all of us, when you and I seek to live like Jesus, Peter says, you're going to suffer, so arm yourself, not with a paintball gun, but with a right attitude. Be willing to suffer for Christ.